Johnny presents the Philip Morris Playhouse, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Howard Duff. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to wake up fresh with no cigarette hangover. Yes, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoke Philip Morris today.
Oh, Philip Morris.
And now with Howard Duff as star, we bring you 4 Hours to Kill. Tonight's production transcribed in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
So you want to know what's the matter? What's wrong with me? Okay, sit down on that bench over there. Make yourself comfortable. Because this takes a while to tell and I want to get all of it off my chest. You know, now that it's over, I can look back and see everything in perspective. Clear back to the days when my brother Walter and I were kids in Vermont. And I can see now that my life's divided into two halves. The first 28 years and the last 4 hours. Yeah. 4 hours ago, I was standing at the big front door of the Bachelor's Club on my way to see Walter for the first time in 5 years. I knew it was going to be tough, but things had changed since the last time we were together. Walter had arrived now. He was the kind of New York lawyer who divides his time between the front page and the society section, and I was still a newspaper bum. The competition between us was over. I was hoping that now, with the numbers up on the scoreboard for everybody to see, Walter might let down a little, decide he could afford to call off whatever it was that had set us at each other's throats from the beginning. Anyway, that's what I hoped. As I said, I knew it would be tough. Asking Walter for anything was always tough. Well, I finally swallowed what pride I had left and walked into the lobby. At the desk next to the stairway, the clerk was in a huddle with a bellboy.
What a big one does the guy expect? $7.25 he calls for his dinner. And if you don't believe me, you can ask the steward because he wrote the time down.
It's one of those clubs where you're supposed to put a call through the desk before going upstairs. I stood around waiting for a minute and figured it might be better if Walter didn't know I was coming, so I walked past them and up the stairway. They didn't even see me.
So I says to myself, okay, so the guy's got a load of martinis aboard.
Let me call him. What does he think we are, magicians? I'll have to wait. His phone's tied up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Larry. Starting tomorrow, someone else is going to take care of Walter Pomeroy.
So it was Walter, and with a load of martinis. I should have stopped right then, turned around, and walked out. It was my exit cue, but I muffed it. Well, nothing can change that now. Anyway, I walked on up to the second floor and down the hall to 206.
Well, it's about time you got here. Bring it.
Hello, Walter.
Oh, Theodore.
That's right.
Well, Brother Theodore, come on in. You're just in time for dinner. The boy will be up in a minute and...
Oh, no thanks, Walter. I haven't got too much time.
Huh? You mean you're turning down a free meal?
Oh, look, let's forget that stuff, shall we? We're grown up now. There's no
sure,
point.
Sure, sure. Sit down.
No, I won't be too long.
Oh? Tell me, Ted, how are things on the paper in Buffalo?
Okay, I guess. I quit yesterday.
Oh, you quit?
Yeah.
Not fired. You quit.
That's what I said.
So now you're out of a job and you figure that
I... Wait a minute, Walter. Wait a minute. Let me tell you all of it. There's a guy I met in the service, Dan Allenby. He's down in Florida now, Fort Lauderdale. Look here. Here's the letter I got from him. He's buying a paper there, a little country sheet, 8 pages twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
He wants me to go in with him. It's nothing big, Walter, but it's the kind of thing I've been looking for years. We can really do something down there. The place is growing. We can double the circulation in 6 months. Dan's got all kinds of ideas, and so have I. He says... What's the matter?
Mm-hmm.
What's so funny?
You...
I don't get it.
How much, Ted?
Well, the price was $10,000. I'll need half of it.
$5,000.
That's right.
Same song, 82nd verse.
I'm not begging, Walter.
What is it, then?
I'm asking you for a loan. I'll sign a note. Well, what about it?
What happened to your pride, Ted?
I thought we agreed to forget...
I didn't agree to anything. You've not only lost what pride you had, you haven't even got good sense.
Okay, Walter. That answers my question.
It's good for a laugh, though. Little brother Theodore crawling on his belly.
Shut up, Walter.
$5,000. See, you thought that
I said, shut up.
Let go of me. Let go of me, Ted.
I've had all of you. I'm going to take you. Hear that, Walter? I've had all of
you. Let go of me, you.
Okay, Walter. Okay. You had that coming for a long time, Walter. Yeah, you're right. I was stupid thinking you'd... Get up. Come on, Walter, get up. I won't bother you anymore. I won't... Walter. Walter! I saw it when I turned him over. A stream of blood oozing out of his right temple where he'd hit his head on the corner of the hearth. No pulse. No breath. Walter was dead. In a spot like that, you don't think. You move. No one knew I was in New York, and I was sure the clerk and the bellboy hadn't seen me cross the lobby. If I could get out without being spotted, I had a chance. I picked up the letter from Allenby, went to the door, put my handkerchief over the knob, turned back to give the room a last look before I left. That's when I saw it. The telephone receiver was off the hook. I remember I looked down at it like it was a poisonous snake or something. Started to hang it up, then changed my mind. Hello?
Walter?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Walter.
Really?
Sorry I kept you waiting so long, but...
Wait a minute. Let's have an understanding right now. When I want a good newspaper man, I'll call you. When I want impersonations, I'll go see the floor show at Leon and Eddie's. Why don't you call your brother and tell him I'm getting tired of holding this telephone?
Oh, who I say is calling?
He knows. I made that pretty clear just before you barged into his apartment.
Well, what makes you think I barged in?
Just a guess. Am I warm?
Not very.
From this end, the dialogue sounded more like a Donnybrook than a pink tea.
Look, let's not go into...
Oh, don't apologize, Theodore. Walter's a class A heel and he had it coming. Now go pick him up off the floor, wherever you left him, bring him to the phone.
Wait. He's out of the apartment right now. Why don't you just give me your name and number and I'll...
He already has it. I gave it to him a year ago in a moment of weakness. Tell him I'll call him back in an hour or so.
Hold it a minute.
Your dinner, Mr. Pomeroy.
Listen, Walter won't be back until late tonight. You better call him at his office in the morning. You got that?
Yes, but...
Mr. Pomeroy.
If I had any sense, I'd have given up right then with a bellboy pounding on the door with that girl on the phone who could send me to the chair with a word... As I said, in a spot like that, you don't think. Something else takes over.
You in there, Mr. Pomeroy?
I had to get my hands on that girl. I knew he'd have her number written down somewhere. There was nothing on the telephone stand, nothing in the drawers but a couple of bridge score pads and some other junk. I wiped the knobs with a handkerchief and turned back to Walter, began searching his pockets. The bellboy was rattling some keys outside when I found it. A little brown leather-covered book with some names and numbers in it. Jumped toward the door, slid behind it just as it opened.
Mr. Pomeroy, I knocked and I... Holy cow! Larry! Larry!
The minute he turned the corner, I took off for the back stairway. The pack was beginning to howl up front when I left for the rear door, still unseen, safe, except for that girl. I knew I'd have to find her somehow, somewhere, and then I'd have to kill her.
You have heard Act One of 4 Hours to Kill, starring Howard Duff. In this brief intermission for a smoke in the Philip Morris Playhouse, may we have your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen.
When your cigarette leaves a stale, musty, smoked-out taste in your mouth,
that's cigarette hangover.
When your cigarette leaves your throat tight, dry, uncomfortable,
that's cigarette hangover.
Yes, that's what takes the joy out of smoking. And when that happens to you, it's time to change to Philip Morris.
Remember, Philip Morris is the one, the only cigarette proved definitely less irritating, definitely milder than any other leading brand. That fact is recognized by eminent medical authorities. No other cigarette can make that statement.
Remember, top-ranking doctors, eminent nose and throat specialists actually suggest Philip Morris in cases of irritation due to smoking. That's why we say,
if you're tired of cigarette hangover, join the millions and change to Philip Morris. You too will discover in Philip Morris a milder smoke, a fresher, cleaner smoke than you've ever known before.
Yes, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today. Philip Morris, America's finest cigarette.
Now, Howard Duff in Act Two of 4 Hours to Kill. Tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
I started across town toward Fifth Avenue, walking slowly, letting the cold night air work on my face. By now, the call was into headquarters and a prowl car was on the way. In a half hour, the homicide men would be there with the police photographers. By 9, the story would be into the morning papers. They'd be out around midnight, and Walter was front-page stuff. And that girl, who'd heard it all on the phone, she'd be able to read the headlines from across the street. And once she added it up, I was through. I had 4 hours to find her. Then somehow, somewhere, I knew I'd have to kill her. I found a phone booth in a Fifth Avenue drugstore and took out the memo book. He'd scribbled first names and phone numbers in 4 or 5 pages. The rest of it was blank. No addresses, nothing else to go on. About a dozen of them belonged to women. So I started on number 1, Anna Lee, at a Murray Hill number.
Hello.
Is this Murray Hill 40098?
That's right.
Is Joanne there, please?
Joanne? Sorry, I don't know any Joanne. You must have the wrong number. Are you sure you want...
I guess I'd better check it again. Sorry.
No, Louise isn't in. And if you're that guy who's been calling her, let me tell you right now.
You say you are making a survey? Well, my little head isn't much good at figures, but I'll surely be glad to help you all that I can.
Hello.
Who's this?
Maxine. Who's this?
Didn't I talk to you a while ago?
Who is... Oh, don't tell me it's Theodore.
Make it Ted, will you?
We're real friendly now, huh?
I hope so.
I see. And you make a habit of hanging up in people's faces?
Well, we were cut off, and you were so secret about giving me your name, I couldn't call you back.
So you went out and bought yourself a crystal ball?
Nope. I just called up every girl in Walter's telephone index until you answered.
Why did you do that?
Well, because I want to see if the girl was as nice as the voice.
How do you blush over the phone?
Why don't you save us both a lot of trouble by telling me where I can meet you?
I'd rather keep it.
I can be pretty persistent.
I can be pretty stubborn. One Pomeroy is about all I can cope with at one time. I'm awfully sorry, Theodore, but...
Wait a minute. Can you talk a little louder? I can't quite... What's that music? The radio?
No, it's not the radio. Please don't bother me. You're a nice boy, but I'm too busy right now to play any games.
Look, you've got to at least give me your last name, Maxine.
Not tonight, Theodore. Some other time.
But wait.
Sorry, pal. You forced me to do this.
Maxine, wait a minute. Wait. Would you tell me if you have a party by the name of Thomas P. Sherman at Plaza 22376?
Thomas P. Sherman, S-H-E-R-M-A-N?
Right. Plaza 22376.
One moment, please.
I looked at my watch. 9 o'clock. I could close my eyes now and see Walter's room, jammed with the boys from the police beat, crowding around the medical examiner, grabbing for the phone, shooting questions at the lieutenant in charge.
Hello, sir.
Yes?
We have no record of a Thomas P. Sherman at Plaza 22376.
876.
Who is listed at that number?
I'm sorry, sir. We do not give that information.
What about the address of the number?
I'm sorry, sir, but we are not...
Look, I've got to have it, operator. It's very urgent.
One moment. I'll connect you with the supervisor.
No, skip it. I started to get panicky then. Got a lot of wild ideas about running, grabbing the next plane for anywhere. But I fought it down. I'd been a reporter long enough to know what happens to guys who run. I had to get that girl. I had to. Yeah.
Through with the phone, pal.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, pal. I gotta get a hold of the little woman. You know, more I explain to her now, the less I'll have to do when I do get home. Boy, they're sure going all out on that Legion parade, ain't they?
Yeah. Parade? Excuse me.
Hey, sure, what's the matter?
What was that you said about a parade?
Legion parade, coming up Fifth Avenue. Crosstown traffic's tied up for 2 hours.
Coming by here?
Yeah, band's down the street now.
The band? That's what I heard.
Huh?
Nothing. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Crowds were lining the curbs outside. Down the avenue, somewhere around 78th Street, I could hear the band at the head of the parade marching towards us. The same band I'd heard over her telephone, passing so close it almost covered her voice. She was on a low floor next to the street, and the band had passed her at exactly 9:01. I remembered looking at my watch. I stood there and waited for the band. It was a wild idea, but I had a feeling if I figured it carefully, I could come pretty close. I walked a block with the band, then another one to make sure. It took them 1:20 to cover a block. We hit 84th Street at 9:16. They'd covered exactly 13 blocks since they'd passed her telephone. That made it somewhere around 71st Street on a ground floor, an apartment, maybe a residential hotel facing Central Park. I turned and started running back down Fifth Avenue. I was getting close, and there were still 2 hours before the morning papers hit the street. Next hour and a half, I checked Fifth Avenue for 2 blocks on either side of 71st, going over nameplates and apartment doorways. There were 2 Maxines. I talked to one on the house phone. She must have been 70 and met the other one face to face, a hatchet-faced character who didn't appreciate being got out of bed by a drunk who had the wrong apartment. That left only one possibility, a residential hotel in the middle of the block. I decided I'd try calling her again. Walked past the cigar stand in the lobby to a row of phone booths at the rear. It was 10:50. Time was running out. Hello, Maxine.
Oh, here we go again. What is it this time, Theodore?
I'm still trying to wear you down.
Because you like my voice.
Right.
You think I'm charming, practically irresistible?
Right. And another thing.
What?
I think you live in the Grayson Arms on Fifth Avenue.
Wrong. I live on the other side of town.
Wait now, be honest with me.
Hold it, will you, just a minute?
She was lying. She knew what it was all about and was playing with me. The panic came back. I looked across the marble floor of the lobby toward the cigar stand. A customer was standing there. A girl had appeared behind the counter to wait on him. Then he left and another guy came in. My heart stood. It was the distributor with a bundle of morning papers.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi. About ready to fall?
Mm-hmm. Leave them on the counter.
All right.
Night.
Night.
My mind was paralyzed. It didn't sink in. Not even when I saw the girl turn away, pick up a phone.
Now, let's see. Where were we, Theodore?
Well, you were stringing me along about living on the other side of town. Listen, Maxine, you've got to...
Yes? Hello? Ted, are you there?
Yeah. Wait. Maxine, have you got the time?
Just a second.
I saw the girl put down the phone, hold her watch toward the light.
It's 10:55.
When are you through work?
Right now. Wait, how did you know I was working?
Stay put for a minute and I'll tell you. Hello.
Hold it a minute, Ted, will you?
Yes, sir.
Package of those, huh?
Yes, sir. 18:25. Thank you. Anything else?
That's up to you.
Now, look, friend.
Wait, I told you I was the persistent type.
What are you talking... You're Ted.
Disappointed?
Not exactly. How did you...
I was calling from the booth over there.
Oh. You mind if I hang up on you again? How did you find the Grayson Arms?
My crystal ball.
You ought to get yourself a booth at the county fair. You'd make a fortune.
Yeah, it's only a sideline. Do you really live across town?
The worst-looking brownstone on 75th, but it's home.
Good. Then I can walk you home.
Walter won't like this.
He won't mind.
Okay, Theodore. I'm whipped. Let me lock up and get my things. I'll be with you in a minute.
I waited while she shut things down, threw a tweed coat over her shoulders, put a blue felt hat with a feather in it in the back of her head. The face matched the voice. Dark hair, wide-set blue eyes with laugh wrinkles at the corners. But I wasn't thinking about that then. I was thinking what a break it was she lived across town on the other side of Central Park.
Ted.
Huh?
Mind if I mention something?
No, go ahead.
We're going the wrong way. The main path across the park's down there.
Well, I know. This is a shortcut, a little darker, but shorter. You don't mind?
No, I don't mind.
At the last minute, she grabbed the paper off the pile, folded it, and stuck it in her pocket without looking at it. We turned into a dark byway. She moved closer and took my arm. The paper pressed against me like a hot branding iron in my side. My heart was pounding now. There was a choking lump in my throat. I hardly dared to talk.
I'm sorry I gave you such a bad time tonight, Ted.
Forget it.
I guess I thought you'd be different. More like your brother. Why are we stopping? Why did you do it?
What do you mean?
You can let your hair down. Walter can't hear us.
Why did I do what?
You mean you do this every night?
What?
Call up strange women and tell them you've fallen in love with their voices?
Oh, let's not talk about that now.
I don't get it, Ted.
Look. I'll tell you later.
Well, never mind. I just thought it was worth mentioning, that's all. I guess I was wrong. Good night, Ted. I can make it the rest of the way alone.
No, wait.
I mean it. Let go of me.
Shh. Quiet. It's a cop. He'll hear us.
Well, I don't care. I just...
Hey! Anyone over there? Hey!
I held her tight, my lips hard against hers. I heard the cop walk by on the main path 50 feet away. There in that dark byway, I could have done it. 10 seconds, maybe 20, and it would be over. I'd be free. But I discovered something else. It wasn't just that I loved her. I knew that now as I felt her respond, felt her arms tighten around me. No, it wasn't just that. I said it before that... Back in that room with Walter's body at my feet, I stopped thinking. Something else took over. I was like an animal, fighting for life, going on nerve and instinct. But there on that black pathway in the park, I began to think again like a human being. And I knew that whatever it is that's born into a murderer wasn't in me. That lover or hater, I could no more murder this girl in cold blood than fly to the moon.
The 8th Avenue entrance.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me, Ted? Something's tearing you to pieces. I can see it.
Okay. You got a morning paper in your coat pocket. Take a look at it.
Paper? What's that got to do with...
Here, give it to me. Yeah, page one. I knew it. Lawyer attacked in city apartment.
Walter?
Yeah, you asked me. Here it is. New York, January 18th. Bruised and bleeding after an attack by a mysterious visitor into his rooms at the Bachelor's Club early last night, Walter Pomeroy. Wait a minute.
Go on.
Walter Pomeroy, noted criminal lawyer, still refused to disclose the identity of his assailant. Dr. James Penrose, attending physician, said Pomeroy suffered a possible concussion from a severe blow on the head, but was otherwise progressing nicely and would be released from City Hospital in 24 hours. The attack came... Good Lord.
Severe blow on the head.
He fell. Listen. Listen, Maxine. This doesn't tell at all. There's something else.
Then what is it? What is the matter?
Okay. So you want to know what's the matter? What's wrong with me? Okay. Sit down on that bench over there. Make yourself comfortable because this takes a while to tell and I want to... And that's it. That's what's wrong. I wanted you to know all of it because you're important to me now. More important than anything else in the world. You can check out if you want to.
It's nothing a cup of coffee won't cure.
Max. Darling.
There's an all-night stand around the corner. Got 20 cents?
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented 4 Hours to Kill, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Our star, Howard Duff, will be back in a moment for a curtain call. In the meantime...
It's a wonderful feeling.
It's a wonderful feeling.
It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to wake up fresh with no cigarette hangover.
Yes, that's something more and more smokers who have changed to Philip Morris are discovering every day. Millions of new smokers now enjoy in Philip Morris a milder smoke, a fresher, cleaner smoke than they've ever known before.
And for a good reason. For in Philip Morris, they enjoy the one cigarette proved definitely less irritating, definitely milder than any other leading brand. Yes, it's actually suggested by top-ranking doctors, eminent nose and throat specialists, in cases of irritation due to smoking.
Doesn't it make good sense for you, too, to try Philip Morris? Yes, join the millions and see what a difference it makes. What a pleasure it is to smoke America's finest cigarette. Next time you step up to a cigarette counter, call for Philip Morris. And remember, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today.
Our Philip Morris Playhouse must have seemed like home to you, Mr. Duff, having you track down a woman, your usual Sam Spade caper.
True, Johnny, and now I spend my days tracking down Yvonne DiCarlo out at Universal International, where we're making Calamity Jane and Sam Bass. Pretty nice profession acting, all in all, or would you care to say, Johnny?
It figures.
What are you lined up for next week, Johnny?
Next week, the Philip Morris Playhouse will present Chester Morris in an exciting script called Copper Turns Green. But before you go, may I present you with this carton of Philip Morris cigarettes? And thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Duff.
Friends, this is John Holbrook reminding you, if you're tired of cigarette hangover, call for the one cigarette that gives you a milder, fresher, cleaner smoke. Yes, from now on.
Call for Philip Morris.
And now goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present transcribed the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Chester Morris. Until then... Take a number from 1 to 10.
I'll take 5.
That's the winner. That's Revelation, a blend of 5 great tobaccos cut 5 different ways. Revelation is a great pipe tobacco that's smooth, burning, fragrant. Only 15 cents for the pocket tin. Revelation.
Tonight's original radio play was by Harold Swanton. Music on the Philip Morris Playhouse is under the direction of Lud Gluskin. All names and characters used on this program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is Art Ballinger saying goodnight for Philip Morris.